Okay, welcome back. Talking with Harry Cooper about history. History. What do we learn from history? I guess that hate is almost immutable in its imprint on society, no matter where you are. Hate. Look at all the ethnic wars of hate in Africa. Remember Pol Pot in Cambodia? Mao Zedong, 50 million there. Joseph Stalin, maybe 100 million. Hate, hate, hate. It's quite a scene. And it's getting worse.
You have to wonder if the guy at the very top, if it's really for hate, or if he's using hate to
motivate
his people to put money in his pocket. Look at Zelensky. How many websites do you look at, and they're all saying that he's in the 2 years he's been president, he's managed to save between 1.2 and 1.6 billion with a B that he's got squirreled away in the Caribbean at the branch of the Dresdner Bank there, and that he's got a $35 million home mansion in Miami Beach.
Oh, it's just the overtime, Harry. Well, he works overtime.
People,
come on.
Is that what it is? Okay, time and a half.
Time.
Jeez.
Hey, look, all a setup, and mass death, we're all stock certificates. You know the game. And when people die, their stock certificate gets cashed in by whoever bought it when they were born and got a birth certificate. So there's big money in mass death amongst the elite that run the planet. That's another aspect.
Did I ever send you that web address that shows you how you can look up who owns you? Your birth certificate, like you say, is a title, like a car.
Yeah, yeah. No, you didn't send me that link. No.
Yeah, when I get back from the holiday weekend, I will send it to you. You'll be surprised. You just punch in your Social Security number, and it tells you, and it's not one or two people. It's, with me, it's like five pages worth. And our mutual friend, who we won't say his name, he told me that my daughter, for instance, could not emigrate from this country to another country because she owes $90,000 in student loans, and she's 31 and can still be productive, so she would not be allowed to leave permanently, especially with that $90,000 worth of student debt. But I'll send that to you when I get back.
All right.
And incidentally, for your listeners, I'm getting a few emails, but if you go to sharkhunters.com, you'll see everything we've got there. Books, videotapes, CDs, et cetera, et cetera. Sharkhunters.com. Now, let me look at some of the pictures. There's not an individual story that I'll elaborate with each picture, but look at number 12, for instance.
All right, before we do that real quick, I want to thank everyone for emailing in. The homepage is, as I described it, Harry just couldn't see it for some reason, but he's got it now, and he was able to view the alleged. I'm not sure that is the Moskva. That could be a test.
Who knows?
It could be a test of a missile against a ship. The Moskva was allegedly hit at night, and there were tugs out there trying to pull it in. But this ship in that video is destroyed, and it goes right down. So I am not personally 100% sure that can be vetted to be the Moskva. I don't know, but it's a perfect example of what one missile can do to a ship that has munitions on board. Go ahead.
Hell yes. But anyhow, most of these people, these 49,000 Volksdeutschers, were killed. Not by getting shot quick and easy.
They were
tied up and beaten to death with clubs, iron rods, sometimes, I guess, just with fists, but beaten to death. And you look at number 12, for instance.
They got the Muammar Gaddafi treatment.
Yeah. Look at number 12. That poor woman, her husband has been murdered. He's laying in the doorway. And she's grieving over the loss of her husband, and her whole life has changed. Her husband is dead. Everybody's life was just, look at number 17. The wives don't even know where their husbands are. They have to look at the dead bodies in the wagons to see if they can find their husband. Can you imagine, you ladies listening in, can you imagine your husband's disappeared and you have to go looking at all sorts of dead bodies, hoping you won't find your husband, but then you have to look. So these stories, these photos from number 10 on up, they all have captions explaining their particular situation. But it pretty much ended on what they call Bloody Sunday in Bromberg. And it was on the 1st of September that Hitler sent the troops in. And we've got some individual comments by people who were there. George von Zirk was a young man. His parents owned a farm there in the what was Germany and had become Poland. And he remembers clearly on the 1st of September, the tanks were rolling in, the Stukas were diving, blowing stuff up, and there was a German officer who was livid because one of his armored cars had been ambushed and everybody in there was dead. And he came back and he saw this kid, George, who was about 15, I think, at the time. And George had been speaking to one of the MPs, and the MP was surprised to find this kid in Poland speaking German. And so George told him that he was Volksdeutscher. And the German commander came back, wanted to kill. They shot quite a few civilians. And he was aiming his gun at George, and the sergeant stepped in front of him and explained that George was a German. So then George went into Germany and joined the Luftwaffe, and he was a bombardier on one of their Heinkel 111 bombers. But the rage in this German officer, because one of his armored cars had been blown up, and German civilians had been massacred. That's the only word you can use, massacred. They're tied up and beaten to death. Can you imagine how that would be? You can't defend yourself, and you know you're going to die, but you're praying, soon, please, get this over with. And the one thing I read you, when they found the bodies, the skulls were bashed in. I don't know what to say beyond that. It's just brutal. And that there was so much hatred by the Polish for the Volksdeutscher. And then that just fanned it. And after the initial skirmish broke out, now Churchill had suckered France along to tell Germany, don't attack Poland, or we'll declare war. Now, why would Churchill feel necessary to warn Germany not to attack Poland? This was 2 weeks before the Wehrmacht went into Poland. Did he realize what was going on? Did he help push it? And then, in the early stages of the war, the United States, of course, had the manufacturing capability like nobody ever thought of. And so the press, remember, I was a kid during the war years, and I remember this. The press was treating both sides fairly at that time. And we were not taking sides yet. This was before Lend-Lease. The combatants were told, you want munitions, we'll sell you munitions. Any side, doesn't matter. You just come over here and pick it up and pay us and go home. Well, of course, the Germans couldn't because the British had a massive navy and the Germans couldn't get through. So the Brits were getting everything, and then nobody was paying for anything. And then we went into Lend-Lease, which most of your listeners are too young to have experienced it. But that means we are providing weapons to Russia and England, et cetera, and you pay us later. Well, they never did pay us. I think every every country that was in World War II on the Allied side. I think there were 93 countries. Even the Bahamas was part of it. I think only Finland was the only one that ever paid back their war debt. But we were supplying munitions to the Brits. And Hitler kept trying to make peace. 20 peace proposals he sent to Churchill were refused because Churchill needed to keep the war going. And the situation with Rudolf Hess, we all know that he was flying over and bailed out
over Scotland.
Yeah. And the press put it down that he was a madman. You know, why would, if he was a madman, why would he steal an airplane and fly over the enemy's country? Well, he was on a mission, a peace mission, and I remember Charles Higham, who was a great researcher, biographer. He did the biographies of Queen Elizabeth, Princess Margaret, Princess Anne, Errol Flynn. He's the one that found out Flynn was actually a spook working for the Germans. And he was member number 25. We got almost 9,000 members now, or at least those numbers were assigned. A lot of people have died. Some have left. But anyhow, he was on board on the early days. And he was on the phone with me all excited because he finally got the records files, some of which he wasn't supposed to have, that proved Hess was on a peace mission. He had a peace proposal, and
Hitler
was going to bail
him.
Out.
Yeah,
Hitler sent him, and he was going to bail out over the lands of the dukedom of the Duke of some damn thing or another. And I remember we published this report years ago in our magazine. Two Polish pilots who were in the RAF were scrambled because the RAF picked up a radar blip that this lone airplane was flying over the English Channel heading for Great Britain. So they scrambled these two fighters. They found him. They swung in on his tail, and they were just about to pull the trigger, except it's pressing a button in a Spitfire. And they got the word from ground control, abort, abort, because ground control had just learned that that was Hess, Rudolf Hess. And they didn't want to shoot him down just any old place because they had a team assembled on the property of the Duke of some damn thing or another to catch him. And that's what they did. And they hustled him off to Spandau prison, incommunicado, and he was the only prisoner there for years and years and years. And every 3 months, the guard would change. One quarter was U.S., one quarter was the Brits, one quarter was the French, and one quarter of the year was the Soviets. And after a while, he was the only guy in the prison. And so everybody's saying, let him go. And the Soviets kept saying, no, no, not yet. Finally, the Soviets said, okay, let him go. Stupid me, I figure, okay, that means just go turn the key, give him a suit and a handful of money and tell him there's the bus stop, get the hell out of here. No, the Brits were in control at that three-month period. And rather than just turning the key and telling him to hit the trail, they had to keep him there for formalities or something or another. They were going to keep him for a week or two more. Well, this poor old man who was so crippled with arthritis he couldn't raise his hands above his waist, he suddenly was so excited he was getting out that he reached way over his head and tied a lamp cord around a beam and hanged himself.
Mm-hmm.
We ran that story about that, too. I think we named the two SAS British guys that hanged him.
Yeah.
So
right.
We're seeing the same thing with this Ukraine-Russia situation. We were in World War II, we were getting all the same one slanted side. All the, you know, we were all the good guys with the white hats. The Germans, boy, I got to quit eating so many cupcakes. The Germans, they were all Nazis. They weren't Germans. They were Nazis. And
which was a term created by MI6 or MI5.
Yeah, Churchill. Yeah, the Germans didn't even know they were Nazis. They thought they were Socis from the NSDAP, Nationale Socialist Deutsches Arbeiterpartei, the National Socialist German Workers' Party. Mm-hmm. But Nazi sounded better. And the same thing, Churchill was the guy, or Churchill's government, was the one who determined that everybody's submarines were to be called submarines except the Germans. They were supposed to be called U-boats because that sounded more sinister, which was from the German, anyhow, Unterseeboot. The propaganda was so much. You know, we were told that they were boiling Jews down to make soap out of them.
Which don't forget the lampshades.
Yeah, right. Jews with tattoos had their skin torn off with the tattoo to make a lampshade. Well, I've known a lot of Jews. I don't know any of them that had tattoos. But at any rate, that was proven to be false. And so much of it, you know. The Germans treated the Allied prisoners decently. But no, that's not what we were told. The only ones that really were rotten were the Japs. They tortured Allied prisoners, butchered them, and in some cases they cooked them and ate them. George Herbert Walker Bush was supposed to be the main course on the island of Chichijima. And when he crashed, you know, some miles offshore, they sent a boat out to get him. But before they could get there, the submarine Finback serviced and took him home. Otherwise, he would have been cooked and eaten. And you Democrats listening, okay, didn't work out that way for you guys. But they were, and they haven't been held to account. We're supposed to still hate all the Germans for whatever. But American prisoners were tortured to death. And they had contests to chop off heads. How many could you chop off in a certain length of time? That's somebody's son who didn't come home. That's somebody's brother, husband, that should have come home but didn't.
POWs. No, yeah. They were just slaughtered one after the other. And they were also used in Japan's bio-warfare experiments. Don't forget that.
Oh, boy. Worse than the Germans were ever said to have been.
Right.
So, you and I don't see eye to eye on this, but I will never, never, never own a Jap car. I know you love your Toyota, but anyhow. So, war is hell, they say. War is a terrible thing, and as you know, I lost my son when he was 20. He was not in the military, though. I had him convinced to join the Air Force or the Navy, and his buddies talked him out of it, and they caused his death. Doesn't matter how or where or when he died, you never get over it. It was 1984, and I still cry about it every so often. And these people, these young men, should have come home. We didn't treat the Japanese prisoners badly.
No, we made Japanese Americans go live in camps, but that's not the same thing as chopping off heads.
Not only that, they did find a lot of spies in those camps.
Yes, they did.
Everybody had spies. And we have to cry our little hearts out over those poor Japanese that got stuck in camps. Nobody bothers to mention the Italians and the Germans who were also stuck in camps, mostly up in the Northeast, because the German Bund was very big. I don't know if your people have seen photos of the German gatherings in Madison Square Garden.
Well, they were German and American. German and Americans were there. It wasn't just German Americans. Yeah.
In Madison Square Garden, the Bund, and as I've discovered down there in South America, at Luna Park, which is like their Madison Square Garden, same thing. They had huge, big rallies in there. I got pictures of them that were in some of my books and in our magazines. So it has been so twisted around. Germany started World War II. Hitler started World War II to kill all the Jews and to rule the world. Well, baloney. With what can he rule the world? He had
why
no
was
Navy.
He still airdropping peace leaflets all over London?
Yeah.
Huh? In 1941. Why was he doing that?
Yeah.
Because he wanted to rule the world?
Yeah, don't forget. Dunkirk. He let that whole British expeditionary bunch escape. He could. He stopped his armored column, 15 kilometers away?
The field generals were furious. He could have put them in labor camps and used them for the war effort. He let them go home.
Yeah.
He let them go home.
Germany.
Some people think that that was the turning point. There were several, but that was one.
It was a major point, yeah. And so you see the same thing with Ukraine. We still don't know the reason, the true reason. You know some. I know a couple. But the problem with propaganda is, and Churchill summed it up perfectly. He said, truth is so precious that she must be surrounded by a bodyguard of lies. So in other words, you get so much propaganda, 99% of it is all phony.
Well, that's what we're getting out of Kiev and the Western Ukraine. I place much more stock in German media reports, those that are released, than I do anything coming out of Kiev. We've seen lie after lie, false flag after false flag. Now they're talking about sending either the camel or the old man himself over to Kiev. And think about false flags, huh? You get rid of old man Biden or the camel. And right away, evil Germans, there you go. The evil Russians did it, and so you drum up the hatred against Russia even another notch. They killed our president. Watch out for that. That may happen. Wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised either, and maybe not even kill him, but just look like he killed him and then move him off someplace.
He's already dead, Harry. He's just a walking cadaver. Come on. Hold on a minute. We got to take a break. Hold on. We'll come right back with Harry Cooper, SharkHunters.com. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Harry at SharkHunters.com. Really one of the most remarkable online true treasuries of real history that you can find. There's nothing better that I know of. Never heard of anything better. So join up, enjoy the publications, look through the books, amazing amounts of material, and lots of things in the pipeline. Will you get busy, stop eating cupcakes, and produce?
I had another cupcake in the break.
God damn. What flavor was this one?
Chocolate with vanilla icing. Filling. Chocolate with chocolate icing and vanilla filling.
Shame. Shame.
I know.
It's all right. He has an Entenmann's gene in him that he can't get rid of.
Yeah. Yeah, I miss him. Old Charlie Entenmann was a...
he contributed mightily to your effort.
Yeah. He was a good guy. Jesus, I got something coming up on your channel. I can't get rid of it. There we go. Okay. Entenmann was a great guy, and he helped us on some of our expeditions. Charlie Entenmann, who owned the Entenmann's bakery, making Entenmann's cupcakes and coffee cakes, etc., which he sold the company some years ago. And he's very wealthy. I've still got a proton magnetometer that he gave me, which is sometimes called a toe fish. I don't know what to do with it anymore. It's sitting on my back deck. I'd love to sell it or give it to somebody, but c'est la vie.
the hell is a tow fish?
It's a magnetometer, proton magnetometer. It looks like a torpedo, about 4 feet long and about 10 inches in diameter. And you tow it behind your boat, and it goes at whatever depth you've set. And if there's anything magnetic down there, like a big chunk of steel, like a boat, submarine, it'll let you know. And then you can send your divers down.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, I say when Entenmann's was still owned by Charlie, and I haven't had any in years, but it was the best mass-produced pastry of all sorts that I've ever had. And that's saying
a
lot.
He had pride in it. He had pride in his work.
It was good.
That's the old German, Deutsche Qualitäts. He had two N's on the back end of his name. He didn't even know what it meant. I told him it meant that he was a duck salesman. Enten is a duck, and you put Enten with man, and it's like it means duck man, a duck salesman. So much for that.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Okay. Well, what we've done is again, shown everyone the truth about how World War II started, about who tried to stop it over and over and over again. We might also mention that it was the Brits who first bombed German civilians and cities. It wasn't the Germans. The Germans had to respond. So they were carefully maneuvered into World War II, and they paid the price. They almost won. And that would have been, that was our last chance to have a different kind of world than we do now. The monetary interests that control this planet are not particularly concerned with our welfare. I think
it
would have been much different with a German world, if you want to call it that. Everything would have moderated. You got to remember that, too. As radical as Germany may have been, and I see no signs that it was, you don't try and sue for peace. You don't try and barter for peace. You don't do the things Germany did, and you can't legitimately be called a warmongering, hate-driven race. They tried to stop it. They were forced into
it. And I remember, too, during the war, we were told that German U-boats machine-gunned survivors in the water and machine-gunned lifeboats, and as it turned out, that was, again, not true.
Well, it was the reverse of reality, if you want to know the truth.
Exactly.
It's the same thing as Ukraine is doing. Same thing as Ukraine is doing. It's all lies.
And it's all slanted in one direction. In the early stages of the war, when a U-boat would sink a ship, usually they would surface among the lifeboats and give fresh water and food if they had it to spare, and help everybody get the lifeboats right side up, etc. One of our members, Captain Peter Chilimedos, was a skipper on a merchant ship that got sunk in the North Atlantic by a German U-boat, and he and his men were bobbing around in the lifeboats, and the U-boat came up. I forget which one it was, but we've got it on the files back home. And the skipper asked if anybody needed medical help, and Peter said, nope, everybody was okay. So the German skipper gave him a compass and told him what direction to head for the closest land, and then he said, I'd like to give you some fresh water, but our desalinator is down. Can I give you a couple of cases of beer instead? So, you know, then there, of course, was the famous Laconia incident where U-156 sank the Cunard liner Laconia, and then, which was a legal target, and then they heard all these people screaming in Italian. They were bringing about 3,000 Italian POWs back to England, plus the wives and children of a lot of the official British officials from Rangoon or wherever over there. So rather than doing anything to hurt them and rather than going away, he surfaced. And he sent out on the international frequency, which I think is 103 point something or another, I'm not sure, without code, saying we are a German submarine involved in a rescue. Any Allied ships, please come and help. No one will shoot at anyone. And yet, there was a U.S. Army Air Corps bomber, a B-24, came over, saw what was going on. There was a big Red Cross laid out on the deck of the submarine, and he went on, didn't do anything. He wound up going to his base on whatever island that was and made his report to his CO, and his CO says, I don't care what was going on. You get back there, and you sink that U-boat. So the guy came back, and he's on his bombing run, and a British major grabbed the signal lamp and flashed out, this is in English, this is a rescue operation. We are British subjects. Do not bomb. Well, it turns out he dropped the bomb anyhow, but it didn't hit the submarine. The bomb went into the first lifeboat, which had adverse consequences for the guys in the lifeboats. So the Germans were, above all, honorable. There was one, again, I forget his name, but there was one Luftwaffe Air Force squadron commander who called all his guys together and said, if any one of you guys shoots an American pilot in his parachute, he said, I'll personally shoot you dead back here at the squadron. So you can come up with all these phony stories to whip up hate, and if you only have one side to go on, and you have to trust, and we were taught to trust our news outlets years ago when they were honest, back when the New York Times was the best newspaper in the world, before they became what they are today. But we trusted Walter Winchell on the radio, and oh man, they were all honest. Now they're nothing but the National Enquirer.
They're worse. It's a disgrace. It's truly disgraceful what the so-called media, what journalism has become here. It's all ultra left-wing communist machine.
Yeah.
Fabrication, lies. It's mass mind control. It's social engineering. It's not news.
Unfortunately, yes. And you try to correct somebody, and sometimes they get violently angry, not because of what you're saying, but because, I mean, subconsciously, you're challenging their belief structures, and so they take that they have to defend. I knew my minor in psychology would come in handy. But that's what was going on there. You know, I heard from reliable sources. Oh, good, yeah. And I was talking to some old veteran. He was not a World War II veteran, but he was later on. And I was telling him basically what I told you. He said, well, what about at camp such and such? They were ripping the fingernails out of American prisoners' fingers. I said, what camp? He told me, I said, there never was a camp by that name, and they weren't ripping out people's fingernails. I've never ran into one single American POW who said he was mistreated in a German camp. We treated the Germans fine. They treated our guys fine.
Yeah.
The Germans and the Russians didn't get along with the POW camps. And the Japanese were horrible with our guys, which is why somebody, the big bruiser like Pappy Boyington, came when he finally got rescued. He was like 90 pounds, and they used to beat the guys, and
they were inhumanly cruel. There's no question. Yeah. Not all of them, but too many.
And a number were brought to task for it. Some of them did get. Like Tojo, for instance, the army chief who became the Minister of War, right. he he shot himself when the Allies captured him. He shot himself, didn't do a very good job. We sent him to the hospital, nursed him back to life, and then hanged him. I would say just let him die. And the camp commandant on the island of Chichijima, where they were butchering and cooking the downed American pilots and feeding them to their soldiers. But
this is a true story.
I read
about that, and it did happen.
Yep.
It did happen.
And if memory serves me correctly, there were only like 12 or 13 Japanese tried and executed for war crimes.
Yeah.
And how many Germans were executed?
Well, you got to understand who ran the whole Nuremberg trial process, put it together.
I know. They were called the tribunals, not trials.
Should have been called the tribunals.
Oh, and let's not forget, after the German surrender, this Russian radio broadcaster by the name of Ilya Ehrenberg, for 3 days, he was telling all the Russian soldiers, you have to kill a German today or you haven't served Mother Russia. And this was after the surrender. And if you haven't raped any women today, you haven't done your duty to Mother Russia. And hundreds of thousands of German women were gang raped and so many committed suicide. But that's okay, see, because we were the good guys. You don't read about that in the history books either.
Nope.
And as time marches on and the participants in the war die off.
There's very few left. How many, Harry, did you know who fought in the European theater who could attest to the type of adversary they were fighting? Germans.
Oh,
dozens over the years,
veterans, you mean?
No, American veterans.
There were several hundred.
Yeah. What did you hear from them?
They all had high respect for them, especially the Waffen-SS. Now, there's two different SS groups. One was the Allgemeine SS, which were the guys in the black uniforms, which everybody has been taught to hate. The other one was the Waffen-SS, which were combat soldiers. They were like the Green Berets of their day, and any American I ever met who fought against the Waffen-SS had nothing but praise for them because they fought honorably, and they didn't know how to quit. There were times when a whole squad of 100 guys would go into combat, and 3 lived through it. But they were treated so horribly by the Russians. We have... Mm-hmm. Eyewitness attestments with what the Russians, the Soviets, did to the German prisoners, and Tito's partisans were the worst of all. Stripped the prisoners naked. I guess they needed the clothing. Tie their hands behind their back with barbed wire and then shove them down a mine shaft of about 400 foot drop. But Tito is a hero too. Because he was on our side.
It's all so complex when you look back at it because of the lies and the distortions. Mm-hmm. And every government had its own nonstop propaganda mill. Two wars being fought. One a war for the mind, and the other a war for territory and people.
Right. So. As we all know, the first casualty of a war is the truth.
Always.
And as I have said before, you have to make your troops hate the other guys, because if you have your troops there and you tell them, hey, the guy on the other side of the battlefield, he's a Christian just like you. He goes to the same church you do. He's got a family at home. He loves his country. He wants to get out of this and go home to his family, just like you do. Now go kill him. People would stop and think a little bit. I found out after the war. Now, Otto Kretschmer was the top submarine commander of the war. He and his wife became good friends. I had a sleeping room in their house. I was a Rotarian, and I found out he was a Rotarian. But yet, we were supposed to be enemies. You know, it just, the people at the top make the rules. And then when the war is over, they rewrite the rules to define who is the war criminal and what constitutes a war crime, ex post facto.
All right, so what do we learn? Nothing. Nothing's changed. Look what's happening in Ukraine. Same exact thing now. The call to go out to castrate all captured Russian troops, many of them being beaten and shot to death. It's the same. This species really has forfeited its right to be called the sentient species controlling this planet. It has not progressed. It has only regressed. It's getting worse. And now they're trying to take people back into the dark and Middle Ages. I think everything's being reversed. It's going the wrong way.
It is. It is. It is indeed. I had an incident a few weeks ago at a McDonald's. I pulled up to the drive-up. Nothing was going on, nothing. So every so often I'd say, hello, anybody there? And then in the other drive-up, suddenly now people are getting waited on, getting their stuff, and I'm still sitting there. So I yelled, hey, anybody home? Some broad came out and yelling, don't you be rude to me. Don't you yell at me. I says, hey, I'm just trying to, you know, get you to take
some
my
service.
Yeah, and she starts yelling at me again, and you're rude. I might not even wait on you. I suggest you get your attitude straightened out, or I'll be on the phone with the McDonald's corporate in a few minutes. And she says, I don't care. You just told me you were rude to me.
They really don't. They'll lie.
You've known me for a while. I've got a very short fuse. So I parked the car, my truck, little Jimmy, and I went in, and there were no customers. There's a nice young man. I asked to speak to the manager. Okay, he goes in the back. He comes back a few minutes later with some little fat guy. And the fat guy, and they're all 18, 19 years old. The little fat guy says, the manager doesn't want to speak to you. The police have been called, and you are ordered to leave. I said, you really called the sheriff's office? Yes, we did. And there's a deputy on the way. I said, well, you just opened a can of worms that you're going to regret. I says, because the sheriff is a good friend of mine. I'll wait for his deputy out here in the lot. Well, of course, the sheriff was never called, but I got a huge apology from corporate. And I said, listen, you got that McDonald's. I'm getting to my point here. I said, you got this McDonald's. You got no adult supervision. All you got is 18 and 19-year-old kids running the place, and it's their clubhouse. And I said, when I was that age, I was commanding a six-man team loading hydrogen bombs onto heavy bombers. And she says, well, this country has gone through a sociological shift. I says, what the hell are you talking about? I said, are you a student? She says, no, I'm 45, and my major was psychology. I said, well, my minor is psychology, and my daughter has a master's in psychology, and we never heard of any such thing as a sociological shift. So she says, well, basically, the youth of today are not as mature as they were in my day. And that's true. These dumbasses are too busy smoking dope or shooting up or whatever else they're doing. Whereas
it's true.
The my age,
A lot of them are.
Yeah, we were out loading hydrogen bombs onto heavy bombers to keep Russia from bombing us.
Right.
Then in World War II, 17, 18-year-old kids were running around with rifles shooting at other 17, 18-year-old kids with rifles. So you're right. Our whole human race seems to be regressing.
We're being taken back. It's not an accident.
Yep.
This is part of the plan. Sad to say.
Yeah, afraid so. Too many people in the United States, in the world, remember, they want to get it down to what, half a billion?
That's about it. That's what I understand.
And we're at 7-point-something billion on the planet?
Well, they've got 5 billion shot up now, and the nuclear war will take care of another 2 or 3 billion.
Oh, boy. Well, we're not. we're not shot up here. We didn't take the jab, and we ain't going to. And if we're going to have a nuclear war, maybe I can get my old job back with the Air Force, commanding people loading hydrogen bombs onto heavy bombers.
You very well might. Yeah.
Hopefully I get more rank.
All right, well, what's going on? What's coming up with Shark Hunters? Do you have any specials now that we should tell people who are not members? And I hope some of you will join. Go take a look, sharkhunters.com. It's an incredible amount of material there.
Right, and anybody who wants to try it out, just send me an email with their name, address, and email address, and we'll give them a 3-month free membership. None of this 5-1 and we'll give you some more free. No. Just let us know, and the first 3 months are free, and we hope that you like it enough to stay on board. We got more books coming out. Let's see. The refueling at sea. Geez, I had no idea. Even though I've been doing this for 30, almost 40 years, I had no idea how many U-boats were getting refueled at sea. Hundreds of them. And we've got it all laid out in there. Plus, we're releasing now, you know, the lost World War II U-boat photos. That's a volume two of that book's coming out. And Hitler, Space, the Final Frontier, Secrets NASA Doesn't Want You to Know, were being released in Germany, is in the German language. As soon as I can get the darn thing formatted, every time I format it, there's something else wrong with it, so.
Well, that'll be a big seller over there. I've no doubt. No. Very good.
I think so.
All right, my friend.
Sharkhunter.com will get you there.
Thank you, Admiral. We'll talk to you next time. Good job, as always.
My pleasure. I'm going to get another cupcake. Take care, Jeff.
Okay. Good night. All right. Harry Cooper, and we'll be back.